Inside Florida Politics. The Essential Podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming from our semi-secret studio in West Palm Beach. And I'm joined, as always, from Tallahassee by Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy.
Hi, George.
And by Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson.
Hey, George.
And our aggressive pursuit of podcasting quality doesn't stop there, because we're very fortunate in this podcast to be joined by Palm Beach Post staff writer Lulu Ramadan.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's light this candle. We got a lot to talk about this week on the podcast. For starters, discerning consumers of media already know that the Palm Beach Post is pretty much your go-to source for presidential visits to Florida. We're pretty experienced covering them. And we've got another one coming up, though. But it's not President Donald Trump, the part-time Palm Beach resident who frequently comes here. Instead, this week, former President George W. Bush is coming to town to raise money for Rick Scott's U.S. Senate bid. And I find that interesting for two reasons. One is that presidents throughout history are kind of like fluctuating stocks. Their reputation goes up and down with historians over time. I mean, just think about, the Democratic Party, for example, used to name all their fundraising dinners after Jefferson and Jackson. And then those guys have kind of been banished now. And among living ex-presidents, also their popularity goes up and down. And so George W. Bush certainly left office with some of the lowest approval ratings of any president. But his reputation has improved a little bit since he's been out of office. And now Rick Scott, who's been very closely identified with President Donald Trump, good friends with him, early cheerleader for him, chaired a pro-Trump super PAC in 2016, was publicly urged by the president at least twice to run for Senate. But now, lately, Rick Scott has been kind of keeping his distance from President Trump. And so it's just kind of interesting that he's bringing in to Palm Beach, of all places, one of the most non-Trumpian figures in the Republican Party, George W. Bush, who was criticized pretty heavily by Trump as a candidate, accused him of lying about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and said that he didn't keep the country safe during 9/11. But now George W. Bush will be in Donald Trump's adopted hometown to raise money for Rick Scott's Senate bid. So let me ask you this, Zach and John. Scott's been kind of keeping his distance from Trump lately. Do you think between now and the election that there will be any Rick Scott, Donald Trump appearance together? Zach Anderson, what's your guess?
It's hard for me to see how Trump helps Rick Scott at this point. I mean, you look at Trump's approval ratings nationwide. There was a number of polls that came out recently that had him in the 30s, which is just incredibly low for a sitting president. He's a little bit higher in Florida. Typically, he's been, in the low 40s. I think there was even one poll that had him upwards of 50% a few weeks ago or a few months ago. But for the most part, Trump's approval rating, while candidates, especially Republican candidates, were eager to court him in the primary and DeSantis hugged him pretty closely, whole different story. So, I think if he does come to Florida, it's sort of a sign that they've given up sort of persuading swing voters and are just really trying to turn out the base.
So your answer to that is what? Yes, you think they will be here, or no, or maybe a
It sort of depends on the dynamics of the election, but I would say that at this point, where everything stands, where the president stands in the polls, I would be surprised if he comes.
Okay.
I tend to agree with that idea, too. I think for Trump, or for Scott, it would be a Hail Mary to bring Trump in, especially at the home stretch of the campaign. That would be a sign that Scott is nowhere near where he hopes to be. I think he's managed to navigate his relationship with Trump fairly well so far, that he's not distancing himself completely from the president, yet he's not sharing a stage with him either. And if he did get to the point where he and Trump were on the same stage, I think that would be a pure effort to try to, you know, rally that Trump base in one last blast of voters before the election.
Okay. Well, just to be different, I'm going to say I agree with you that he's I don't think they're going to share a stage together at one of the Donald Trump rallies. But I predict that there will be some kind of private Scott, you know, the president will come down and do like a fundraiser for Scott. I'm just to be different. I'm going to predict that. But we'll see what happens, and we'll revisit this in the next 2 months, I'm sure. But right now, I hear some kind of music playing here. Listeners to the podcast, of course, recognize that as the pick a number music, the segment where each of us selects a number, and then later in the podcast, we explain what that means in Florida politics. I'm going to start with John Kennedy. Do you have a number, John? What is it?
George, I do. I'm going to get into the digital world. 1.6 is my number.
Okay. That's kind of a Zach Anderson type of number, but you usually go big, but 1.6. All right. John Kennedy with a 1.6. Zach Anderson, what's your number?
I guess the rules are reversed here, George, because I'm going to go big with a 48, and John can have the decimal, please.
48. Okay. And I don't know if it's all right with you guys, but we do have Lulu Ramadan in the studio. Is it all right with you if we have her pick a number?
A guest number picker. That would be good.
Okay. Lulu, do you have a number?
I do. I'm a big fan of the pick a number segment, and I'm going to go with 56.
56. Okay, just writing that down, and I'm sure those of you that aren't operating heavy machinery while you listen to the podcast, you're also welcome to take notes. My number is going to be 50 this week. So that's a lot of numbers here. And just to review real quickly, from lowest to highest, John Kennedy with a 1.6, Lulu Ramadan with a 48 guest number, George Bennett, that's George. Me,
that was me with the 48, George.
Okay, well, I've already blown it here. All right. Well, let's...
Too many numbers.
48 for Zach Anderson, 50 for George Bennett, that's me, and 56, the high number from the guest position by Lulu Ramadan. And stay, you'll want to stay right to the end of the podcast, and we'll explain what each of those numbers mean. But first, let's talk some more. Let's talk about the... governor's race. Ron DeSantis has not really kind of ran his campaign during the primary. He was accused of running his campaign out of a Fox TV studio and relying on the president's tweets. And since winning the primary, he hasn't been real visible out on the trail. But he did fulfill there is, I think, an article in the Florida Constitution that says that a candidate for governor has to take an airboat ride in the Everglades. And he did fulfill that recently by touring the Everglades to roll out some environmental policies. Thomas Cordy, one of our sound engineers, is going to cue up a little clip of Ron DeSantis talking about the environment.
We have obviously a lot of issues, economy, education, public safety. But I think the environment, not only is it one of the most important, it's the most urgent for us to take action.
Okay. Zach Anderson, tell us a little bit about what Ron DeSantis had to say.
Yeah, so he rolled out his environmental plan. It was noteworthy for a number of reasons. One, it's the first real policy proposal that he's put out, definitely in the general election, but even going back to the primary, he didn't really get too detailed about any of his policies. It's also really interesting that a Republican is really emphasizing the environment. DeSantis has been consistent on this. He was emphasizing the environment in his primary, and he actually has some credentials on this. He was he's taken a stand against U.S. sugar or the sugar companies and the pollution that they've put into the Everglades and into the Lake Okeechobee that are going out into the estuaries. So he said he would crack down on that. His plan also would ban oil drilling off the coast of Florida, would ban fracking for oil and gas. And, you know, it's just an interesting bid by him to sort of maybe move a little bit more towards the center here as he goes into the general election and appeal to voters who have some of these concerns about the environment.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll have to see how that plays out. And also, speaking of the governor's race, and now we're going to bring our guest that we've advertised, and you've heard her voice already, Lulu Ramadan. But before we do, yes, the guest music. As you know, all guests on the podcast are welcomed with the royalty-free surf music that you're hearing right now. Lulu Ramadan recently had a story about an aspect of the governor's race that she's going to tell us about. It's interesting. You know, we've talked a lot about how this is a very nationalized race. And so here's kind of an example of it being nationalized, but also being very micro-targeted to a very specific segment of the electorate. Lulu, tell us about the story that you did recently.
Yeah, absolutely. So Andrew Gillum did an interview on a pretty progressive podcast back in June, where he made some comments about the decision to move the U.S. embassy in Israel, and he called it a provocation. He said that it was a bad move, and criticized it pretty harshly. And at the time, it went largely unnoticed. And you know, he was
who listens to podcasts, right?
True, right? But no, at the time it was it went largely unnoticed, and at the time, you know, you're probably right. Probably no one heard it, but now Ron DeSantis's campaign has kind of singled it out and is using it as an example to kind of sway Jewish voters and saying that he's anti-Israel.
And let's play that clip right now. This was on a podcast in June. Andrew Gillum talking about the decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem.
At the hands of this administration, we now have even incited more violence by recognizing Jerusalem to be the capital and also to locate the United States Embassy there. Again, just adding more fuel to the fire. I think it was a provocation by the president that was unnecessary and has been costly from a human toll.
Okay, so what are now you know the governor of Florida? Why is this significant at all? Do you think in a governor's race?
Yeah, the governor's office doesn't have a foreign policy, so it doesn't seem to be. And Florida Democrats seem to agree that this shouldn't really play a role in the election. But DeSantis's campaign appears to be kind of picking it out and highlighting it to sway Jewish voters in what appears to be what's going to be a really close race. And so about 5% of Florida voters are Jewish. And, you know, in a race that's polling so closely right now, I guess they think that that's a target that they need to hit. They need to shave some points off of Gillum's support.
And the Jewish vote historically is pretty lopsided for the Democrats. I think, you know, in presidential campaigns, if you're a Democrat running for president, you can probably expect to get 70%, give or take, of the Jewish vote. And that's, I think, also probably pretty similar in a governor's race. So, but as you point out, you know, Florida in a close election, If you can shave, I don't think the Republicans think they're going to win the Jewish vote, but I think what they're trying to do is maybe sow some doubts and shave a few points off of the Jewish vote. And in a close election, that could be significant. Well, what Israel is one of the few areas left that's where there seems to be a lot of bipartisan consensus. I mean, just in Palm Beach County, Ted Deutch and Lois Frankel and Alcee Hastings, all three very liberal members of Congress who have been very critical of President Trump, but all of them supported the move of the embassy. What's the reaction been from Democrats to Gillum saying that about the embassy?
You know, a lot of them have pointed to previous comments by Gillum saying that he does support, he is pro-Israel. You know, those comments don't completely capture his stance on the issue, which is very, you know, nuanced. And so they've defended him. They say that it's not going to make a difference and that it's likely not going to sway Jewish voters, although some of them have come forward and, you know, I've gotten some feedback saying, yeah, that is a pretty, you know, pretty serious stance to take and it might sway some voters. But
sure. And, you know, Gillum is, you know, very much very liberal candidate. And but it's noteworthy that he has said that he does not support, you know, one of the favorite causes on the left is the so-called BDS movement, boycott, divest, sanctions against Israel. And Gillum has said he does not support that. So but it'll be interesting to see. And it is an example. You usually see it in presidential years. The Republicans in Florida, and Florida is really, there's only a few states where there's enough Jewish voters, where it's a competitive state and there's a significant number of Jewish voters where, the, you know, Republicans will make that effort to play the pro-Israel card to try to, peel away, Jewish support for Democrats, but something definitely to watch, in this governor's race. And you know, there is a lot of precedent in this race we've already seen and talked about, for by Gillum and others to inject non-governor type issues into the race. And in fact, that you see some of that in a new ad by the Republican Governors Association that attacks Andrew Gillum. Let's play Thomas Cordy another clip there. This is from this new RGA ad attacking Andrew Gillum.
How far out is Andrew Gillum? He's on another planet.
Come in, Planet Andrew. Over.
All right. Come in, Planet Andrew. John Kennedy, tell us a little bit about what that ad is and what are the issues that they highlight in that advertisement?
Yeah, the Republicans are teeing off on Gillum for being, you know, really out of touch with the mainstream, I guess. They're critical of him for expanding health care and wanting to abolish the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, ICE. They also blast him for his proposal to hike the corporate income tax by 40%. He wants to use that money, which would be about $1 billion, toward education. That's where he wants to put it. And he also wants to provide for minimum $50,000 salaries for starting teachers.
Well, I definitely want to hear a little more about the corporate income tax and that plan. But if I recall from the RGA ad, there's three issues that they hit Gillum on. So you said one was the healthcare issue, which he's for single payer healthcare.
Getting rid of ICE.
So these two issues that Gillum brought up in the primary, you know, kind of virtue signaling to liberal Democratic primary voters about these issues that the governor really has no control over. But now the RGA is using them against him. But the one issue that is definitely within the, you know, state government and the governor is this issue of the corporate income tax. And you've been looking at that, John. So, yeah, fill us in a little bit about who pays, what is the corporate income tax, who pays it, and what's Gillum's proposal for it?
Yeah, well, the corporate income tax in Florida has been around since 1971, and it brings in about $2.2 billion a year. That makes it the second largest single source of state tax revenue, although it's far eclipsed by the largest, which is the state sales tax that brings in about $25 billion. You know, it's paid by corporations on their income, about 200,000 filers all told. But what Gillum would want to do by having this money go toward public schools, you have to wonder, is this just an effort to try to seek support from public school advocates and teachers, you know, which would be the area that is going to benefit from this tax increase? Is it purely symbolic? Because for Gillum, he has to not only get elected governor first, but then to increase it, he would need a constitutionally required 60% support in both the House and Senate to pass this. And the House and Senate are overwhelmingly controlled by Republicans. So, you know, it could set up for a really long deadlock in Tallahassee if he does push this proposal going forward. Now, there's also some symbolism in the sense that it is a sharp break with current Republican Governor Rick Scott, who campaigned in 2010 with the promise of phasing out the tax completely. But Scott could never get the legislature to go along with them. All they did was trim around the edges of it a little bit by increasing exemptions.
Even with a Republican governor and wanting to get rid of a tax and a Republican-controlled legislature, they were never willing to go along with that.
No, but largely because it's serious money that the state needs for, you know, keeping the lights on, basically. But in Gillum's case, he would expand it significantly. And this legislature is beyond tax averse. But it's a remarkable step by Gillum, but it has allowed for these kind of ads, like we're hearing from the RGA right now, to start hitting Florida airwaves.
Zach Anderson, what's your take on the on that ad and on the corporate income tax proposal?
Hiking taxes in Florida has been just a no-go for at least a decade or more now under Republican leadership. And so this is a huge break. And of course, the Republicans are going to jump all over it. It's an issue that could impact swing voters. I mean, even people that might agree with Gillum on other things might not like to see a tax increase. So they're definitely going to push this he's too liberal for Florida message, and we'll just see what resonates. You know, is that an effective line of attack? They obviously think it is early on here. I don't know, you know, how voters are going to be, what are going to be the primary issues for them. Obviously, Trump is going to be a huge issue, and, you know, the environment has been a big concern with pollution in Florida. So, you know, this is just one line of attack, I think, that we'll see throughout the general election.
I was just going to conclude with that was, you know, again, this is one of those elements where Gillum running in the primary against four other candidates, this was an initiative that helped set him apart.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And you mentioned, George, the virtue signaling, and that plays back to Lulu's story. You know, obviously, Gillum wanted, a lot of liberals are sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, and he wanted to signal to them that he's sympathetic to some degree as well with that embassy issue. It's the same thing with, you know, the tax issue. He wanted to signal that he supports education. And this is one way that he set himself apart by saying, well, I actually have a plan to pay for increasing education spending. He wanted to let, you know, liberals know that he was sympathetic on the immigration issue. So he called for abolishing ICE. Same thing with, you know, calling to impeach Trump, even though he had no control over that. So he made a lot of positions. He took a lot of positions that, as you said, sort of virtue signaling to liberals to let them know that he was their guy. And now he's going to have to kind of own those in the general election. And we'll see whether those are effective general election issues.
Right. And you know, we never like to go too long on the podcast without talking about President Donald Trump, the part-time Palm Beach resident. And I neglected earlier, we had one other soundbite, and I don't want to make things too difficult on our sound engineer, Thomas Cordy. But just speaking of President Trump, in the Senate race, there's a brand new ad out by Bill Nelson. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet. Yeah, actually, Bill Nelson came out with two new ads, one in English and one in Spanish. And the Spanish language one is interesting because Bill Nelson, in some of the polls, appears to be kind of underperforming with Hispanic voters. So he came out with this ad, and this played just the beginning of that ad, Thomas.
Soy Bill Nelson y apruebo este mensaje.
All right. If you caught that, two things. First, I've never heard Bill Nelson speak Spanish, and maybe I still haven't. I don't know if that really counts. But if you notice, the ad goes on to describe Rick Scott and Donald Trump as muy buenos amigos. And the ad just highlights the friendship between Rick Scott and Donald Trump. So it's just interesting that his first big play to Hispanic voters is to remind them that Rick Scott has been close friends with Donald Trump, hoping that the president's unpopularity with Latinos will rub off on Rick Scott. But I just wanted to make sure we got that in, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about that later. But right now, what I'm hearing coming in is some royalty-free funky music, which means it's time to return to that pick a number segment. And this is the first historic moment on the podcast, the first time we've had four numbers in Pick a Number, and it confused me earlier. But we're going to get it straight. So let's review those numbers. We're going to go lowest to highest again. So, Zach Anderson, or no, I'm sorry. Boy, I really messed this up. Who had the 1.6? Is that John Kennedy?
That was me, yeah. Okay. I got into the decimal places.
With a very Andersonian number, kind of threw me off. 1.6. What is that about?
Well, 1.6 is in $1 million, and that's what Florida taxpayers have contributed so far to Democrat Andrew Gillum and Republican Ron DeSantis. That's under the state's campaign financing law. And both men are due another check this week. Public financing is often ridiculed, you know, as welfare for politicians, but this year nobody seems to have a problem with it. And if voters think they've, you know, their investments are perhaps not the best right now, think about this. They've already spent $1.3 million in public financing for losing candidates Gwen Graham and Adam Putnam. So how'd that investment work out?
Wow. That's another strong number that you've brought. Okay. 48 is our next number. Zach Anderson, what is that?
Yeah, so we didn't talk about it, but there were two polls over the last week that had Andrew Gillum leading in the governor's race. People were wondering if Gillum would be a strong general election candidate given his liberal views. And so it's pretty interesting to see that he's had an early lead over Ron DeSantis. But there was some good number, a good number in the most recent poll for DeSantis was 48% of those surveyed thought that Florida was headed, is headed in the right direction, which, you know, Florida has been under Republican leadership in the governor's mansion and the state legislature for the last 20 years. So, you know, if people make the connection and they think Florida's heading in the right direction under Republican leadership, that could be a good sign for DeSantis. And I think we'll see him continuing to praise Rick Scott and his leadership as we go forward here.
All right. Well, my number, you may recall, was 50. 50 is the number of states from which people contributed to Andrew Gillum's campaign for governor immediately after he won the Democratic primary. Just kind of an illustration of how nationalized the governor's race is. Gillum, a relative unknown before he won, after winning the primary, immediately became a national figure and was able to draw contributions from all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Just for comparison, Ron DeSantis in that same period after winning the Republican primary got contributions from 47 states. He did not get any contributions from North Dakota or South Dakota or from Bernie Sanders' territory in Vermont. So there you have it. Now, and then, as you may remember, we do have a fourth entry in Pick a Number, and that's from Lulu. Your number was 56. What does that number mean?
That's right. So 56 is the percentage of Florida voters younger than 30 who turned out in the last presidential election. And so we touched on this before with Andrew Gillum's effort to drive young liberal voters. But that compares to 82% turnout for voters 65 and older. So it seems like a bit of a risky move. You're kind of turning to voters who have been kind of unreliable in the past. And so, yeah, that's the target that he's trying to hit, though.
Wow. Okay. So 56% of the under 30 set voted in the presidential election compared to 82% of of seniors in Florida. It shows you kind of the turnout disparity that's out there. Well, okay, that brings us to the conclusion of another Inside Florida Politics podcast. We hope you have enjoyed it. I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett. I've been assisted here in the studio by Corzano. That's the team of Thomas Cordy and Joe Forzano. And also our special guest this week, Lulu Ramadan. And as always, we've been joined by John Kennedy, the State Capitol Bureau Chief for Gatehouse in Tallahassee, and Sarasota Herald Tribune politics editor, Zach Anderson. Thank you.
Thanks, George.